Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. My name is Todd Embley, your co-host, without my other co-host, Ryan Shukin, who is once again over in Taipei. The China Accelerator MOX demo days are happening this week, both in Taipei and in Singapore. So Ryan is super busy handling all that. So it is just me once again. And today's guest is Stephanie Zhu. She is a name. She is an enigma. She is amazing. She's so well known here in Shanghai and across China as a very vibrant young entrepreneur. She arrived 4 years ago. She got into the Bun Shop, which was an e-commerce platform. She's one of the best power networkers that we know. And she also runs the League of Extraordinary Women here in Shanghai. They do a lot of really, really great events. And she's a big advocate for women in startups and entrepreneurship and tech and that kind of stuff here in Shanghai. So we had a really, really great conversation around women in tech and entrepreneurship and all her experiences through that. And then as well, networking. She is a power networker, as good as I've seen. She has a great cross-section of high-energy, intellectual value add to conversations that she has with people. She's an amazing connector and matchmaker, and she just does it in a professional way that is nothing but pleasant and pleasurable. She's an amazing person to deal with. So we really get into all that and how it all works here in China. So without further ado, we're just going to jump right into it. I hope you enjoy. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. My name is Todd Embley, as you know, and today I am without Ryan again, as I probably mentioned in the intro, but I am here with Stephanie Zhu, and I'm going to give a quick little brief background, as we usually do, about Steph, who is affectionately called Zhu in the local community here. So Zhu has been here for a number of years. Zhu, jump in. Tell us how many. 4 years.
My family is Shanghainese, so I spent a lot of time here when I was a kid and then came back about 4 or 5 years ago.
So. Okay. Yeah. So you jumped in here. Now, this... I kind of had to keep your LinkedIn open here to take a look at all the things you're doing, because you really are kind of a zoo. I mean, there's just so many things that you've done. I'm going to try and get through this easy. So the founder of the League of Extraordinary Women, the Shanghai director of the UN Charter School World Academy for the Future of Women, a mentor for WeDo, consultant for Lean in China for the Body
Foundation.
Body, yeah. But that's B-A-D-I. Yeah, bad. I know how to read people. If you're like, he didn't know how to say body, it's because it's spelled B-A-D-I. The Body Foundation and the Eden Ministry. All these other events and things and dinners and stuff that you do. I mean, you know, power networking is just, that defines stuff, in two words. And then the curator, 2016 curator for the World Economic Forum Shanghai 2 Hub. And that, I think, is not exhaustive by any means. I mean, now, yes, you're with SAP Anywhere, but... you've finally gone a little bit corporate, I guess we could say. But I'll just say, like, when we met, to go back, was when I was with China Accelerator and we were still back up in Dalian. We were doing our 8x8 events, 8 speakers for 8 minutes kind of thing. And we were coming down to Shanghai, as we usually do on our Geeks on a Train. And I was looking for some speakers down here. And somebody... introduced me and said, you should get in touch with these two girls, Zhu and Diana, League of Extraordinary Women, and the Bun Shop. Oh my gosh, we didn't even mention the Bun Shop earlier. My gosh, you did so many things.
Way back when.
It seems like it. But they're like, oh yeah, they're great. So then I got in touch with you guys, and then you guys actually as a team did a great talk at the 8x8 back in like 2013 or, yeah. No, wow. 12, maybe 12, something like 12 or 13. Out near where Innovation Works is, yeah. In the Yang Pu there. And then that's when we got to know you. And then, of course, we moved down here. Zhu, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. So, I guess let's just talk about when you got here, because, this is a show in English for a lot of entrepreneurs or for people running startups that are looking to come into China. You arrived here about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. You've been insanely active, you know, but how was it when you kind of first got here? What was your feeling and how did you end up getting into, you know, the startup world?
So I got, when I first got here, I actually came with a very local Chinese startup called mm-hmm. Jiapong. It's HTC funded. It's basically a Chinese clone of Foursquare. Okay. They're defunct now, but at the time, you know, they were growing really fast from 20 to about 300 people within a year. And it just seemed like such a high growth, high potential company to be at. Mm-hmm. And then previous to that, I was with a social media marketing company back in New York that was also a startup that was, you know, really well run and just operationally very efficient. And so I had kind of, in my head, I was like, oh, all startups must be this way. how wrong I was. So I came to China with Jiapong. I was there for about 4 months and I worked on 4 different projects during those 4 months. And wow. It was just so terribly managed, and I had kind of really thought their CEO would be a thought leader, would be, you know, this visionary, which I had in my previous company, and that wasn't there either. Obviously, I went in as an employee, but I think that's a lesson to a lot of people who are looking to come into China with Chinese business partners or Chinese JVs or whatever it may be, because, you know, they put on one face, you know, when you're first talking and interviewing, yeah. and that initial a relationship, and then when you actually get here, things maybe run very, very differently.
But do you think that's a good, you know, I mean, maybe counseling people to, you know, say, hey, listen, you know, don't do it this way, whatever, but maybe it's a necessary learning curve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, rather than, basically, I interviewed a couple times with them and then like jumped on board. What I should have done is I should have said, okay, bring me out there for 2 or 3 months. I'll work with you guys on a specific project. If that works out, then let's talk about a longer term employment. Mm-hmm. And I think a business, you know, partnership should also be the same way. Rather than going and signing something immediately, should go out, you know, come to actual China and work with them and see how their day-to-day is. Mm. And then, you know, if you really want to get in bed with them, decide after a couple of months.
So maybe like a short-term consultation project, special project, something that has maybe a defined beginning and end and with particular KPIs or deliverables or something like that, just to get an idea. That's probably really good advice. It'll let you know whether you enjoy China, whether you enjoy the company. It'll give you the learning you get to see, but you're probably going to be a little more relaxed and not think like, oh my gosh, I've sunk everything, you know, I thought this was going to be my future and now it's gone into flux because I don't know if this is the right thing for me. Whereas in this case, you know that there's, you know, it's a short-term thing. You can kind of bail if you want to and jump overboard, or you have the opportunity to, you know, if you really like it, to stay.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Now I got a question for you. You're insanely young. Probably the youngest person we've ever had on the show. But you've done just about everything. I don't know. And I mean, when I talk about, I don't even know how you do so much. I mean, you're one of the most busy networked people because you're like half most people's age, but that you know everybody and can talk intelligently and, you know, empathetically about everybody in the ecosystem. Okay. So, did you even bother with university?
Yeah, I graduated from Princeton.
You did that too?
Yeah, I graduated. I skipped 2 grades, so then I graduated when I was a little bit younger, and so that's why I'm. And then I moved out here, you know, when I was 19. Mm, yeah, so mm-hmm. I was a lot younger when I first came here. But I think the desire to. Here's some honest talk. I think the desire to be really well networked is also a product of my being younger, right? As someone who is younger and, you know, that is wanting to be more legitimate, mm-hmm. I think I reach out and work harder to be better networked so that I can gain more respect off of that.
Yeah.
Because I don't often have the experience that comes with age, right?
Right.
So by being well networked, people are able to lend me their experiences and I can kind of learn more from them. And mm-hmm. so I think those two things are actually very related.
Now, I think you do it the right way, because from what I know and from everything that I've known about you, you're very authentic and genuine about this power networking, right? I mean, you're always super helpful. You're always willing to connect people or introduce people, or, you know, you're pretty active on WeChat and the WeChat groups and things, and always willing to take a moment to throw in some advice or be helpful to somebody all the time. And then you do dinners, and then you actually conscientiously think, you know, like, oh, who would be very interesting to bring, or who could use, you know, a matching with these two people. And you kind of curate your dinners. You keep them small sometimes, you know, 10, 12, 15 people, something. But you kind of handpick different people that could use that, maybe introductions or something that you know. You know, it's always very thoughtful. It's always very authentic, very, very genuine. Unlike, you know, what we might see a lot of people that are networking because they want to be, let's just say, famous. Yep. They just want to be like a super well-known person to everybody. And, you know, I think there's, you know, there's two ways of being authentic and genuine. It's like doing networking the way you do it, or you just kind of let your work speak for itself. A lot of people just kind of skip both of those and just try to get to know everybody. At a young age, that's very admirable. I'm just curious. I mean, is this really just it? Is this just a natural, your personality just coming out?
I think I'm probably more of, I'm extreme extrovert. Right. I'm definitely the kind of person, like, I feel a lot more comfortable in a big group of people than I may by myself. And I'm very much the kind of like, I think everybody should be using their strength to help other people. And so my strength may be knowing a lot of people, and the people that I'm connecting, you know, maybe amazingly talented in so many other ways, but they're also just busy people. They also don't have the time or the energy to go out and network, because it's, you know, oftentimes these networking things are after a really long day at work and you're exhausted and you don't want to go talk to a bunch of random strangers. It's not what gives you energy, right? But, you know, there's a lot of studies done on, you know, introverts versus extroverts, and extroverts are the kinds of people who just get energy off of other people, right? So oftentimes, sometimes after work, I find myself being like, oh, I really don't want to go to another event. But as soon as I'm at the event, I'm so excited to be there, and I'm really happy I did that.
Usually. So I'm like 75% of that or something like that. I mean, I like going to conferences because I love just walking around and talking to people and seeing people I know and things like this, and then getting introductions. I love doing talks. You know, I love going to the universities or meeting with the MBAs or the entrepreneurship program, things like this, and talking to them. And I just get like, I'm almost vibrating by the end of it, because I'm like, I'm so jazzed up about talking about all these things or whatever. And it just gets me going. But then I will actually, there are some events though, I would just like, I'll get in there and I'll be like, ugh.
But then you can leave, right? It's also, it's the reason that I curate our events so much is because it is about the energy of the group, right? It's, if you invite a bunch of random people that you may not know, then you get a random outcome. But if you at least know the group of people, like with our women's events, you know, we may not curate it so much and I don't handpick everybody who comes, but it, you know, the people who come are from a bigger network of women who are interested in furthering the community and furthering each other's careers and personal lives and et cetera. And so if everyone joins with that, you know, intention, I think you're able to bring good energy in the room, and everybody feels that, and it's kind of something that just keeps going.
True. I mean, it's super valuable for me just to know somebody like you, because, you know, I mean, I am family first. I got my two kids, and my gosh, they're growing so fast. And I'm just like, I want to spend like every kind of minute I can with them. So pretty much Monday to Friday, like in the evenings, I will be able to step up, but then Saturday and Sunday, sorry, like I just don't do meetings and I don't do events on weekends and stuff, if I can help it. I mean, with the program, we travel, we do events. I'm obsessed with helping the startups that I'm, you know, that we've invested in and that have invested in us in this relationship. So I want to help them. So I just, I'm not. But then if you invite me to something, then I would actually take it very seriously, and consider it something that I really need to go to. But then a lot of them, no.
But I also, I respect that so much, right? Because, you know, I'm young. I'm in a stage where I don't have children. I don't have a family that I have to look after. And I hope that when I get to that stage, you know, there will be some young person, quotation marks, who can go do all the networking and stuff. And, you know, I can connect with them as well. Like, it's just, it's, it, it takes all different kinds of people to make the world go round, right? Yeah.
Okay, so you talked about, you know, the women's events and things like that. So this is something I definitely want to talk about until we get to the break, maybe even after, because this is a really big thing. So you're having entrepreneurship here, but, you know, and tying together for our listeners, entrepreneurship in China, what happens here, but then all our women listeners especially would be very interested to know, what's it like to be a woman entrepreneur in China? And then just, you know, on the grander scale globally, obviously we're trying to, you know, encourage more women and bring more women in. There's lots and lots of articles going on. I mean, I think this has really been a hot topic for the last, you know, 6 months to a year. We don't have enough women in VCs or managing funds or running the funds. And then because of that, and it's a trickle down. And so women have a harder time getting funds. You know, I was at an event at the HALT thing this weekend, and we had a really great woman who was there giving a mentoring as well. And she told everybody point blank, when you're raising funds, get a guy to talk numbers, because VCs just don't want to hear numbers coming from a woman's mouth. And I was shocked. I actually thought that was taking the whole world a step back. I'm like, yeah, that might work for some and maybe plausible advice a little bit here, but I'm like, that's a dangerous thing to be saying to people. But I don't know. Okay, so let's just go back.
I think in a case like that, you have to be authentic, right? Like, if you are a woman and you're just, and you're much better at pitching your vision and your strategy and that kind of stuff, then you should pitch that. If you're a woman and you're just really good at numbers and accounting and finance, then you should pitch that. I don't think it's a matter of whether a man or a woman is pitching it. I think it's a matter of whether the person pitching is competent or not. Yeah. And, you know, you shouldn't, I think some now, because there's so much conversation about gender equality and VCs and all that kind of in the tech and startup world, people think that, oh, if we put a woman in front of the VCs, they'll think diversity and we'll get money more likely, right? Yeah. Which is
the opposite. Better for the product. May not be better for, you know, have an advantage in the fundraising.
Right.
Money is gender agnostic.
Right.
And so people driven by money, you know, it shouldn't matter as much.
I mean, I think being a female entrepreneur, you know, when we were running Bunch Up, when we were running League X, it was really beneficial because we were that, like, almost affirmative action on a lot of, like, panels and speaking opportunities. Yeah. They were like, we want a young woman because, you know, that's an age thing and that's a gender thing. And, you know, I would say take advantage of opportunities like that. Like, if someone comes to you and they're like, oh, we need another woman on the panel, like, don't get offended that someone's picking you just because you're a woman. Just take advantage of that and rock the panel. Be better than everybody else on it. Right. I mean, I think China is probably a safer place to be a female entrepreneur than maybe the Valley. You know, I've never worked in the Valley, but at least in my experience in New York, it can be quite misogynistic, and it's very ageist, right? It's very, you climb the ladder and then you get to where you deserve, versus China is a lot more open and they're willing to give you opportunities, regardless of your gender. And I've never had really anybody say, you know, I was doing another interview there, they were like, what's the most like sexist thing that has ever happened to you in China? And I had to think a really long time and I really couldn't think of anything. And that may also just be because we're in Shanghai. You know, Shanghai has more female billionaires and millionaires by absolute number and percentage out of like we have, I think, 70 something or 50 something millionaires, and the next largest city has like 12. Like Shanghai really blows it out of the park.
Well, this is where all the money kind of families are.
Yeah.
I mean, you get all the political leaders and things that are up in Beijing, and a lot of people like to promote Beijing and stuff. But let's be honest, they don't have their families in Beijing.
That's
they wouldn't
true.
Subject their kids to the pollution. They know better than that. They run up there for work, but they don't keep their families there.
But when I'm talking about, so I'm talking about self-made female millionaires and billionaires. So like women have, you know, been able to make it in Shanghai, I think, in a way that's different from more conservative Beijing or more conservative South as well.
We get the land of the tiger moms.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is, you know, in China, the women typically run the finances of the household.
Yeah.
You know,
and we give an allowance to the husbands.
That's right. The men kind of hand over their checks and then the women kind of make the purchasing decisions. So for those of you in those markets or doing startups around that kind of stuff, you know,
market to the women.
Exactly. Be aware that they're the ones who will make those decisions on where to spend money. You know, it's very interesting. So you know, tell us a little bit about the League of Extraordinary Women. You know, I think it's just something very necessary, you know.
So there's a lot of female empowerment networks in China, in Shanghai in particular. And they all kind of focus on different things. Lean In really focuses on Chinese women, kind of a younger demographic. EPWS focuses on expats, an older demographic. We're kind of in the middle. So we started about 2 or 3 years ago. We have about 3,500 members, and we really focus on well-balanced women. So not just being successful in leadership and career, but also in fitness and charity, in your family, you know, just making sure that a lot of different aspects of being a woman is being fulfilled. And then we do events 2 to 3 times every month. They may be really big 100-person speaking events, you know, charity drives. They may be smaller workshops where we bring in senior leadership. We're currently working on a speaking series for women in tech with PwC and SAP, you know, which will be, you know, really helping multinationals do capacity building within their companies and bringing young women in contact with their senior female executives. So it's quite a wide range, but, you know, I think being a woman means being versatile.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to really play to. Our league is also about 70% expat or returnees, about 30% local Chinese women. And so a lot of our events, we, you know, we try to alternate between Chinese speaking and English speaking. And it's about like cross-cultural exchange and how we can bring our own competencies and, you know, do peer learning as well.
Okay. We'll jump to the break and we'll come back. This is a topic that should never go away from our conversation, so we can continue to sprinkle in because I really like having continuous train of thought about, you know, the influence of the women and you having done. I want to come back and talk about the bun shop, what you and Diana built and how that all went and some of the ins and outs, the goods, the bads, and all the things that you guys learned from doing that. So quick thank you to our sponsors and we'll be right back. Hey everybody, Todd here. Just want to jump in and thank our sponsors very, very much for the support that they give to us and having our backs in trying to get this podcast going. And so far, so good. I think everybody's given us some really great feedback and it's done well. And in no small part to the backing of China Accelerator, you know, full transparency, I do work for China Accelerator. I am the program director. You know, everything that they have brought to the ecosystem that we have tried to bring to the ecosystem, I think has been very, very well received. And, you know, I think doing a lot to just promote and nurture the startup ecosystem, not just in Shanghai, but all around China and globally as we get a lot of global companies coming through as well. And, you know, it's just if you want to enter China, as we talk about, we even mentioned it in the show today, if you are thinking about coming to China, I think understanding how difficult China can be and joining forces with China Accelerator to launch your product in China is just something that we find is incredibly valuable and think it's very, very important. Now, we also want to thank PeopleSquared. We are a tenant, so to speak. We live and operate out of PeopleSquared, the Hero Space, which is their flagship operation and space here in the middle of Shanghai, right in downtown Jing'an. They think they have 9 spaces throughout Shanghai. I think they have over a dozen throughout China, one in Shenzhen, up in Beijing. They are the premier co-working space of China right now. And their dedication to community. I was talking with Jenny on the way out the door about all the new players that have come into the ecosystem here. And Jenny said, you know, we really got to hand it to the PeopleSquared people because they have their office in PeopleSquared. And she said that it's just their commitment to being so helpful to startups and just working for the startups is just yet to be matched by any other co-working space in China. So kudos to PeopleSquared, my friend Bob Jung, who's the founder. We've had him on the show before. So big thanks to China Accelerator and PeopleSquared for their sponsorship. Really appreciate it. Welcome back, everybody. Sitting here with Steph Zhu, old friend who's extremely young. And, and you know, we just kind of left the topic before the break talking about, you know, women in the Extraordinary League or the League of Extraordinary Women. And you worked side by side with an extraordinary woman, Diana Tsai, who together you guys founded the Bun Shop. That is now, is it over?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go, let's walk through that a little bit to, you know, tell us through, you know, how you and Di came up with this and, you know, some things and how to go. What was it like doing that in China here? I mean, you guys were then even super, super young.
Yeah. So the Bun Shop brought Chinese designers to the Western world. We were an e-commerce platform. Mm-hmm. And then we also sold a little bit wholesale to a number of boutiques all over the world. It was it was both our first company. And so there were a lot of challenges in trying to figure out exactly how to run a company to begin with, let alone this kind of business, right? And we ended up having to be very flexible. So one of our biggest challenges was we were selling a lot. You know, so we launched right before Christmas in 2012, I believe. We did really well then, did really well all through Chinese New Year because a lot of our products were like home furnishings, mm-hmm. giftable products that do really good well during the like holiday season, right?
And gifting is important to mention with the Chinese New Year because that's what everybody does, right? Okay, so.
So, yeah, so I mean, but right after that, we really started to struggle because, you know, it's not the products we were selling weren't products that you would buy for yourself. And so we ended up having to look at our market and we really saw this by the fact that we got a lot of positive press, Financial Times, TechCrunch, mm-hmm. Elle, all of mm-hmm. those people, that, you know, Americans are still very closed off regarding what made in China means, right? Our tagline was, made in China is dead, designed in China killed it. And we really wanted it to be this like big revolution of, you know, creatives and designers coming out of China. But like mm-hmm. at the same time, there were the Apple factories and the Foxconns and all of that kind of stuff that going on at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And
that's, you know, there's a stigma, I think, that you were just constantly having to fight.
And I don't, when we went into this, we thought, you know, there would be like a niche market for the people who had visited China, who were really into China, who, you know, saw the potential of China. And I don't think we were able, either they were just really hard to find or we weren't able to target correctly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, luckily we're small, lean, you know, all those buzzwords. And so we were able to pivot to being more of a B2B corporate gifting platform. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a lot better for our designers as well because our quantity was so inconsistent that it was difficult for them to produce versus if you get one big corporate order, it's 500 units. They pay half up front, which pays for their production costs and they pay, you know, the half. So it's also really good for these like boutique brands that are looking to co-brand with these large multinationals. And it looks good from a CSR perspective for multinationals as well, because they're working with like local artisans, locally made products, things like that. I think with that, then we started working a lot more locally. We were working with factories. We were working with, you know, packaging producers and also often working on very tight deadlines, you know, because these companies would come to us a month before and say, hey, we're having a big launch event. And it's like Maserati, so you can't say no to them.
Yeah.
And I think that experience was very, very different from, you know, it's if someone is pushing you, you can always push the person down the line. I think that's something I've learned about China is there's always a way to either like pay a little bit more money to speed the process up, or like if you just put enough pressure on people, they'll eventually do it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people who are new to coming to China to do business, they often see this as pushy or rude.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. It's just the way that, you know, business is done.
It's kind of their natural tendency is that I'm going to kind of sit back and somebody asks me to do something once, you know, there's kind of a rule. It's like, okay, you know, and then twice it's like, all right. And, you know, the third time, okay, a little bit more or something like this. But I mean, it's just, it's almost just, it really is kind of this unwritten rule out there of just, you just, you know, this is the whole thing. I was like, if it was really important, they would be pushing me and calling me every 2 hours, you know? So they wait for that to happen
You have to micromanage.
Yeah.
Like there's no way, especially if you're working with local companies in any way, you know, you just push them and it gets done and it's frustrating, but that's how it is.
Yeah. So now it's not happening.
so, uh, So we did a lot of corporate gifting, everything like that. That was going really well. And then we looked at our team and we realized, hey, we actually have a lot more creatives and we do have like salespeople or project managers. And so we kept kind of that side of the business running, but then we started focusing on doing campaigns around the gifting and stuff that we were doing as well. So content, design, things like that. And then from there, that was called League X, which people often get confused with League of Extraordinary Women, but they're actually separate things. But League X is a boutique marketing branding firm that focuses on Chinese tech startups. And so we actually had the opportunity to work with some really cool, like we worked with BTC China, which is China's largest Bitcoin exchange. This was last year.
Bobby Lee.
Yeah, Bobby Lee. Very different kind of industry than what we had been doing with designers and creatives, but at the same time, very similar because they're very good at what they're good at, which in, you know, with designers and artisans, it's creating. And with tech CEOs, oftentimes it's development, it's the product, it's the technical aspects. But when you're asking them to look long-term in terms of their business, their vision, their strategy, they struggle a little bit more with that. And they, you know, they really believe in their product, which they need to, but they don't realize that their customers may not understand or may not be able to distinguish between their product and somebody else's. And so that's what branding and marketing is there for. And so it's kind of that education process.
Yes, I can imagine.
But at the same time, it's very rewarding because it is the local companies that are doing some really exciting, and they're all like Bobby was Yahoo, I believe.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have worked with a couple other people who are ex-Alibaba, ex-Tencent, ex-Baidu, all those kinds of guys. And that's fascinating because it's how they bring that culture that they've in the BAT companies.
Yeah.
And they've kind of created. So actually, we had a CEO ask us like point blank, like, I think culture is really important. I want to create a culture. Can we do that? Like it was... And it was kind of like a, well, culture is something that's more, you know, organically built. It's what you lead by. And even that was something that we had to educate them on. Right. But for me, I think that's the fact that he was conscientious.
Yeah. Cognizant of the fact that this is something important that he should focus on. It says something.
Especially because if you look at like large Chinese companies, cultures is non-existent, right? You could like swap out any like five people from one company to the other one and there would be no difference because everyone works, eats, lives, breathes, everything in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember a very long time ago when I first kind of got to China, I mean, somebody was telling me, you know, you take care of their wallet, you know, take care of their bellies and, you know, make sure that they get a day off, you know, make sure they get enough rest. You'll be good. You know, it was like that simple. And I think it's changed a lot. I think culture is mattering a lot here because there's a little bit less in the employee loyalty over here. Okay, I think it's very easy. It's just not there that much. People switch jobs seems like on a dime really over here. And so I think that's actually helping people realize that the culture is more important.
It's like there's a herd mentality, right? Yeah. So if you see like two or three of your colleagues leave, you're like, even if you personally don't feel like something is wrong, you're like, oh crap, there must be something wrong that I'm not seeing. And if everyone's leaving, then I should leave too. And it if you pass a tipping point, then it just exacerbates the entire problem.
I think we were talking about co-working spaces, what's happening here in China. I think that has actually happened a little bit too. We've seen like the herd has kind of been moving around. And then there's the, you know, one set of co-working spaces that's kind of become hot and then everybody kind of runs over there and everything. And it's a new thing. And then, you know, pretty soon it'll be interesting because, you know, WeWork is coming in, and I don't know, what is it? They said July might be their first space or something like that. We'll see what happens there. Maybe the hurdle will move over there then after. And I don't know. There's a lot of opportunity and things like that. Anyway.
So we did that for a while. And then Diana moved back to the U.S. because she wanted to work on something that was more
for her.
Socially focused in June, July. And, you know, we've been around 3 years. And obviously that's not a really long time, but I think we are all, you know, running a
company. It's still a long time. I mean, in startup land, that's a freaking long time.
and I think we were all kind of a little bit burnt out, right? So we kind of went our separate ways. We're all still very, very close. And I think that's something that's important. And I think we were also lucky that we were cash flow positive enough to pay all our investors back in the beginning, which was, you know, a point of pride, I think, for us as well. To end well with... Because also in China, I think a lot of startups run away with investors' money. And so that... at least keeping those relationships was also important.
That is a dangerous place. I had a, you know, they'll run away with anything though. They'll run away with product. They'll run away with code. They'll run away with money. You know, it, I've seen this numerous times. You know, guy came in, they had a great, it was actually a kind of a social dating app for gays, for men. And they had done really, really well. They were raising money and then they had a term sheet on the table. They had an offer to raise money and stuff like that. And so the CEO took it back, to his co-founders and, to discuss it. And then 2 days later, the CTO was gone and had taken all the code and taken everything, because he owned everything on the app. So it was all his accounts and everything. Once he saw the valuation of the company, he said, holy smokes, that's how much it's worth. Well, I think I can just steal it and take it on my, I mean, they immediately start thinking about, I actually have to share this amount with somebody else. Whereas how can I get it all for myself? And then ran away. And then there was somebody else who came in and did that. They, another company had built an app. They had raised a bunch of money. And then the CEO actually just ran with the money, leaving the team sitting there. So then the CTO was actually trying to sell the code on Taobao. He actually opened a Taobao store, which is, you know, for those of you listening abroad, Taobao is, you know, the Amazon of China. And he had actually gone on Taobao and opened up, tried to sell the code for this product. And then now he's, of course, trying to create a platform for basically defunct companies and all this code that's written out there that's floating in cyberspace. You know, it's like space junk, but nobody sees it. So he wants to have a platform for all this, you know, tech junk for people can load it in, and then, you know, it goes through a quality control, you know, aspect to make sure it's all good, and then it's linked to GitHub and all these things. And you guys were almost a bit of an anomaly though, because you guys were so successful for a while, you know, both in the community and with the business. I don't know,
my first thought, I think, is just like, wow, we were so immensely lucky. Like, because everyone talks about this, like, luck thing, right?
Yeah.
And we were really lucky that it was the time that Fab, like, because if you look at all the other companies that were like us, like Aha Live, Fab, you know, Everlane, even those, like, you know, Fab sold for, you know, a tiny fraction of what they were being, and like, worth. And I think we just saw a market and was like, okay, we're going to go do this now. And we got out when it was necessary. But also at the same time, I think there was a level of arrogance that comes with age and thinking like, wow, of all the people who can do this, I believe that I'm the one that can really do this. And obviously that's good and bad, because you walk into it with a big ego and it gets stuff done, but you also make a lot of mistakes on the way. And I think, you know, over the 3 years, it was definitely a humility building experience. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who comes to China has to be ready to be humbled by it. You know, China is this really big dragon, and there's so much opportunity, but there's also, which means there's so much room for failure. And you really have to come into it with the attitude of coming to learn versus the attitude of like, I've done something that's worked somewhere else and it's going to work here. And I know that's the advice that everyone, you know, gives, but I mean that from not just a company standpoint. I mean that from a personal standpoint. Just because you are personally successful in a different country, in a different city, doesn't mean you're going to be successful in China.
I'm curious, a couple young ladies doing an e-commerce site here in China. I'm just curious about the legal financial banking side of things. How did you guys set up? How were you guys dealing with inflows and outflows? How did you learn to set that up? And any advice on what you might do differently now?
So we are, one of our other business partners was actually one of Diana's cousins, who's local Chinese.
Okay.
So I think
that obviously helps.
Yeah.
So family, both, trustable.
Both Diana and I have a lot of family in China, so that helps. But so we were set up as a Chinese trading company with a US LLC, linked together through contracts.
Okay.
It was a little bit more complicated than it needed to be, I think. We probably would have gone back and set up a woofie. But the way that we did it, I actually think was cheaper than what a woofie would have been. I mean, we just talked, when we first were looking to set up the company, we just talked to like a bunch of other people who'd set up companies too, and just got contacts that way.
The networking coming back into play.
Because I think if you like look on, because there's a lot of companies that do like advising and stuff like that. Some accelerators also offer that. And I know a lot of people were really excited about the free trade zone for a while.
Yeah.
But nothing really happened with that.
No.
So
unless
yeah.
you're actually doing import export or trading.
So I think it's just, you know, ask around what your peers are doing and then kind of do that.
If you're networked. And so this is another thing I want to ask you is, you know, for people come here, I think getting involved and immersed in the local ecosystems is really important. I think it's going to really help lead you to people that can give you some great advice for being in here, being in a new place. You guys were able to do this extremely fast and extremely well. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I never bought anything off Bun Shop. I'm sorry. But I was up in Dalian the whole time. But
we shipped to Dalian.
You know, but you did it right and you did it well. Was it luck? Was it fluke? Or did you have, you know, was this the way you wanted to do it? Or did you just do it naturally? And
I think it's keeping track of people. People don't follow up with other people after, you know, networking events or stuff, not because they don't want to.
Was there a spreadsheet? Was there an Excel file?
There. kind of. I tried to spreadsheet for a while, but there were like too many names on it and I couldn't keep track. We also tried out a
bunch. I joked about that with Darren. I said, I'm pretty sure they had spreadsheets and they noted every time they had a point of contact with somebody and maybe made a little note and then they would get reminders and when too much time has passed.
Well, there's a bunch of software that helps you do that. But I also think being well-read plays into that, or like sometimes, you know, really to not, if you don't have enough time to like catch up with somebody over drinks or coffee or whatever, but you want to say, hey, I'm thinking of you, then, you know, reading something that has something to do with them and just sending that article over, I think is always a good way of something, like something small that people appreciate.
That's a good trick. I don't know if that would work with like my wife. I haven't bought you flowers in years, but here's an interesting article.
WeChat is so great in terms of the groups and the communities that we're all able to build off there and how active everybody is. And, you know, we run a 500-person League of Extraordinary Women group. And, you know, we just encourage people to keep answering questions.
I'm not in that
people.
Group, am I?
You've been asking me for a couple of years to join that group, Todd.
Yeah, I wanted to get in there. It just seems like the best place. can't get in though. Sue, thanks very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. One of the most powerful, you know, power networking people that I've ever met or known, especially here in Shanghai. Plug time. How can people, if you want? Maybe you don't want people to get in touch with you, but I have a feeling maybe you do. So what could we possibly tell people about what you're in or where they might to get in touch with you or join up with what you're doing?
So I have a website, stephaniezu.com. So
let's spell Stephanie because it's
S-T-E-P-H-A-N-Y.
Yes.
Z-O-O.
Right. .com.
Yeah, .com. Yeah. So if you send me an email on there or just add me on LinkedIn, you know, always I'm glued to my phone. My boyfriend complains a lot, but so I'm very fast to respond.
Yeah.
So just any of those platforms, I'm always available, always ready to chat, or, you know, even if you live very far away, I'm happy to jump on a call with you guys.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Steph.
Thank you so much.
And thank
Sean.
You to everybody for listening. Sorry to Ryan who can't be here. Ryan's going to be back. He's going to join me on the next episode and we're going to get rocking and rolling again. I'm really excited to get my co-host back. Thanks to Darren on the sound and David behind the scenes who post-produces all these shows and Chi who's kind of still our executive producer. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for listening and we'll see you soon.
Hi, before we go, I have one favor to ask of you guys. I'm here with Chilio, our producer, and what do we want you?
Hi, guys. Please write to us at team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, because we really want to get your voice on the air. We will ask our next guest the questions that you write us. And who doesn't have any questions about China and startups, Chi?
Yeah, of course we do have a lot of questions.
Yeah, so give us a ping at team@chinastartuppulse.com.